Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 394, and we're going to continue now with the instructions that God gave Israel through Moses. We went through the section, and we had a little mini-series there about justice and judgment, sort of an overview. And then it's interesting to notice here that in the same segment of scriptures, along with judges and justice and judgment, God is talking also about idol worship. Well, oftentimes, when you think about it, especially in the old days, when they had judges who did not, in essence, do their job properly, if they did not dispense justice and judgment, well, people were oppressed and afflicted, and crime was on the rise, and oppression was everywhere, and those who were violent, you know, took advantage of that, and so people began to cry to God, obviously, but if they were not obedient at the time, if they were not people who really sought God with their whole being and heart, they would look to anybody who was going to deliver them. And oftentimes that's the way it ended up. They went to idol worship, thinking that this is their immediate God that they can touch and handle and talk to and hold in their own hands and, you know, bring to their own homes. And so the link, you know, between the two became very, very close. And it's very interesting that in the Talmud, when you read about this scripture that you see here in verse 21, which comes right after the appointment of justice, that is of judges and officers and their task to seek justice and judgment in the land and to execute it. You read in verse 21, "You shall not plant you an Asherah of any kind of tree before the altar of the Lord your God." And it's interesting to see that it comes right after that. So there must be some kind of a link as people look at it. And in the Talmud, when it comes to that, you read something about it. What's the link here? And so there is a statement where you read that he who appoints a judge who is unfit for his office is as if he were to build an Asherah, a center of heathen worship. And that's unfortunately what happens. Now, the Asherah was a tree that was linked to the goddess Esther, Astaroth, or Astaroth, or Ashtoreth. They call it by different names in different places. That was the goddess of fertility. And from that, basically, the pagans that came into the so-called church, they brought it with them, and they called Passover Easter. That's as simple as that. That's how blatant they were at the time, and the leaders that were no longer the people of God, and they were no longer the servants of God. They were just doing their own thing at that point. They were all pagans. They were not Israelites. They were not Jews. And they certainly were not disciples of the apostles. They took over, in essence, and they said, okay, let's have all the pagans come. We need to swell our numbers. And since we cannot get, you know, they cannot get rid of their own past, they can bring it with them as long as they christen it. You see, make it Christian. So they say, okay, well, let's, since the Passover and this festival that the pagans were keeping was at the same time, it was a spring one, you see, the spring festival, because that was a god of the goddess that is of fertility, and that's when fertility process begins in the creation, springtime, everything comes back to life. So let's just change the name of Passover into Easter. That's basically what happened there. And God, obviously, at this point, is saying that you should not do that. And if, you know, if you make the link there, you know, the judges did their job. If the officers did their job, they wouldn't allow such people to go into idolatry, you see. And they would not allow people to suffer wrongly. And the people, you know, would have a relationship with God instead of with the false gods. And during that time also, as the Apostle Paul tells us, there was an awful lot of abuse in the church, as he was exhorting the brethren, exhorting the ministry also at the same time, and he basically was telling them that, you know, your ministers will smite you on the face, you know, they take advantage of you. So there was a rise of violence within the church because people were not, you know, seeking God and serving God and obeying the voice and walking the path of Jesus Christ. And so you see the link between the two. As we mentioned earlier when we talked about idolatry, why do people need idol worship? Well, they have needs to be fulfilled. And if they're not being fulfilled, they'll look for anything to fulfill it. And that's the way they oftentimes ended up with idolatry. And you see an awful lot of that when you read the history of the kings of Israel and the kings of Judah. They went into idolatry always because they had a need for security and protection. Instead of looking to God for that, well, they went to the idols that the nations around them had, and they thought, well, that will give me security and protection and deliverance from enemies and so forth. And so God makes it very plain. And also links it, again, you know, with the instructions about judges and justice and judgment. You shall not plant a you and Asherah of any kind. Any kind, you see. You can't say, well, this is okay, you know, that's not that big of a deal. Any kind, he said. None of them. Period. Any kind tree beside the altar of the Lord your God. And that's exactly what they ended up doing. They did it in Jerusalem, they did it in Shiloh, in different places. You see? And so God brought destruction on Shiloh and later on in Jerusalem. And they did it on every hill and every family and every household, and everybody just did it. Because when they do not seek God and they have all kind of problems all around and the judges are not doing their job, you see, then a lot of needs are there that otherwise wouldn't be there. And so he says, don't do that. Don't plant it, baby, said the altar of God. And they became so degenerate that they thought that that's the way to worship God. Well, you know, there is God, and then there is the goddess of fertility. Instead of realizing, as they should, from the instructions of the head, that God is the one that takes care of all that. You don't need different gods for it. And so I said, don't do it. Don't plant it beside the altar of the Lord, which you shall make you. Neither shall you set you up a pillar which the Lord your God hates. Well, now, what was the pillar? You see, the Asherah was to symbolize the goddess of fertility. And what was the pillar for? See, the goddess of fertility is a feminine, a female, and the pillar was for Baal, the male. And what was the male? The penis. And that's exactly what they did. Actually, literally erected a penis, you know, big, tall stone. And that's basically what it was. And, you know, they would carve it like a penis. And they worshipped it. Why? Because, you know, there is a goddess of fertility. She's a female. And now you need, you know, to have the fertility happen, you need the male counterpart. And so Baal became the male counterpart to them. And Ashtoreth was the female counterpart. And so they thought that's the way things happen. And obviously, God despised that, and yet they've done it. And you go to the territory of England in some places, you know, you find all those stones. That's basically what they were, because the children of Israel migrated in that direction, and basically the English people, the British people, there are different tribes of Israel there. In England you find Ephraim, then you go to Wales, you find the Levites, you go to Scotland, you find the Jews from the line of Zerah, you go to Ireland, you find the Danites, you know, and the rest of the tribes in northwestern Europe. And so, you know, they brought their corrupted religion with them, because when they left the land of Israel, that is when they were ejected out of it, they were basically idol worshippers. And so they had a mixture there, and that's what the Druid priesthood was all about. You know, the priests of Israel that had a mixture of truth in their religion and also the pagan teachings that they brought with them. And so God basically says, I don't want it, I hate it, don't do it. Israel did it. And that's the way all people are, including little children. You tell them don't do it, that's the thing they go for. That's human nature. That's what the Apostle Paul was saying, the carnal mind, you know, the physical mind that we have, if it's not governed and guided and directed and formed and molded by the Spirit of God, by His truth, is an enemy of God. It doesn't like to be told by God what to do. It is not subject to the Torah of God, to the law of God, neither indeed can be. Now and then God has to crush it. So now we are in chapter 17 and verse 1. We continue with the same subject. You shall not sacrifice unto the Lord your God an ox or a sheep wherein is a blemish, even any evil thing. For that is an abomination unto the Lord your God. And the same thing goes for the spiritual sacrifice also. That when you bring a spiritual sacrifice before God, you see, whatever the sacrifice is and your attitude above all things should be clean, pure, from the heart, You see? Not with malice, not with hatred with it, not with deceitfulness in it. And you cannot just be a kind of a person that lives double lives and think that all they have to do is just come before God and everything is going to be okay. Like in some religion, you know, they commit whatever they want to commit and they go before the priest and they make a confession, you see, and they are told, you know, do something like, you know, this thing or that thing or the other thing, you know, a few Hail Marys, whatever it may be, and count the rosaries and do a few good deeds and everything's taken care of, and then go back and continue the same way of life and come back and do it all over again. God says, I'm not interested in this kind of a sacrifice from you or worship from you. And that's what Jesus Christ was saying in terms of an attitude. He said, if you bring a sacrifice to the temple and you remember that you've got some kind of a dispute with your brother, your mate, anybody, when you come before God with that in mind, with that in heart, you're not without spot, without blemish, and I don't want you. So I said, you lift your sacrifice there in the temple, go back, get reconciled, then come back. Then God will accept you. That's the same principle here, you see. And we should never think that we can appease God and please God just by giving Him a little reward. He's not interested in that. He wants truth in the inward part. He wants a living sacrifice that is clean and pure and acceptable before Him, inside and outside. And so whatever we do, if we're in the habit of stealing and robbing and defrauding people and cheating people, and then we think that we can come to the church or synagogue or any place and give a big donation, well, God is not impressed with that. Men may be, you see, but not God. He's not interested in that and doesn't count. You wasted your money, you see. Now, people may have used it to their own advantage, but God did not accept your offering and your sacrifice, so don't play games with God. That's what he's saying here. It's an abomination in his sight. He's not going to accept it. That's an audacity on the part of any human being to think that he can play games like that with God. And so he says in verse 3, there be found in the midst of you within any of your gates which the Lord your God gives you, man or woman that does that which is evil in the sight of the Lord your God. And we read it earlier, and I believe in chapter 14, about the same subject. And God again repeats the manner in which you take care of these kind of matters. And so he said, if you find a man like that, that does an evil thing in the sight of the Lord in transgressing his covenant, that could be anything. In covenant, that means the terms of the covenant. The covenant was the marriage covenant. And the marriage covenant had a term. That is a set of terms. And you had to abide by those things, or otherwise you are breaking the covenant. You see, if you say, I don't care about the Sabbath, or I need to keep it, Jesus died, you know, died for me, you know, all kind of things like that people come up with, God basically says you've broken the covenant. And that could be for anything that is a part of the covenant. Because man shall live by every word of that proceeds out of the mouth of God, not just the pick and choose, whatever you want, whatever your group, or organization, or church, or synagogue, or whatever, says you should do, for that matter, any religion on the face of the earth. Since God is the God of the whole earth, He looks at everybody, you see, and He sees their actions and their deeds, and based on that, He basically rewards them, either good or bad. Even though He didn't make a covenant, per se, with them, still, based on their behavior, they are going to be rewarded, even in this lifetime. And so He says, if you do any evil thing in transgressing the covenant, verse 3, and has gone and served other gods. That's why earlier he said, don't make to yourself any tree, don't plant any tree there to worship the goddess, and don't put a pillar to worship another god. In other words, Baal, the Lord is a calling. That's what Baal means, Lord. And Baal in Hebrew also means master, and also means husband. You see, a woman, when you go to Israel, you find a woman calling her husband Baal, Baali, my husband. You see? And God, even though this is what it means, you know, by itself it's innocent, but yet God makes it very plain through the prophet that he came to the point that he totally despises this word that he said to Israel, you will no longer, you see it in Isaiah, he said, you will no longer call me Baali, you see, my husband. In other words, I don't like this name because of the abuse, because of what people have done with it. You're going to call it Ishi, which means my man. And that's what Christ said. You know, there are a lot of people hanging around all the time. Lord, Lord. That's all they say. Lord, Lord. You see? Lord means Adon, Master, Baal. That's what it means. See, by itself, nothing wrong with it. But because their attitude is not there properly, as it should be, because their heart is somewhere else, because they're committing idolatry and adultery in their heart and their mind and their flesh. You see? He says, I'm going to cut off the names of the Baals. You see, the name, you know, this custom and habit, calling everything Baal, Master, Lord. And so he says, if people do things like that and they worship, that means, you know, that they go on and serve other gods and worship them, or the sun, or the moon, or any of the hosts of heaven, which I have commanded not. And it is in that context that the teaching and the command and the understanding was given. A lot of people, as time went by, misunderstood it. When God says, I am the only God and there is none else beside me, that's the context he's talking about. In other words, he's the direct one that was dealing with humanity, and as a direct one dealing with humanity, you see, being sent by the El Elyon, the Most High, the Father, the one that became known as the Father to mankind, that's in essence what he was saying. It's not that there is no Father or there is no God in heaven, in the heaven of heavens. It's as far as him dealing with humanity, he is the only God. You see, so it's sort of a partial monotheism, but it's not a true monotheism, because monotheism means one God, period. You see, only one divine being. That's what it means. It doesn't mean one divine being, three in one, or two in one, or seven in one. You see, that's when even in the writings of the disciples, you read, there is only one God and one Lord. You see, that's not three in one. Not two separate identities. There are two of them, not three of them. Only one God and one Lord. So God cannot be three in one, because there wouldn't be nonsense to say one God and one Lord. And that was repeated again and again, many times. And all the beginning of all the disciples, all the epistles, that is, the statements, you know, the introductory statements that they made there, all of them mention the same thing, that there is one God and one Lord. And they all came to the brethren in the name of Elohim, the Father, and in the name of Jesus Christ. There is no mention of a third one. But, you know, one of the pagan doctrines was that, Trinity. That's an old doctrine. It's not a new one, you see. And that Trinity entered into the false religion that became known as Christianity, that has, you know, very little to do with the genuine religion. And that's the way generally the people of Israel were. They're mixing truth with error, and that's the entirety of the history of Israel. And that was a problem that they had since the beginning, until the coming of Jesus Christ, the Messiah, the Lord, when he's going to put an end to all of that. And then you read in Zechariah chapter 14, verse 9, that in that day God shall be one, that is the Lord shall be one, and his name one. No more idols. No more mixture of truth and error. And then for 1,000 years he reigns upon this earth, being the direct God of Israel and the whole world, preparing the earth for the coming of the Father and heaven in Jerusalem. That's when heaven comes down to earth. Nobody goes up to heaven. And then the Father comes down, and now the Father and the Lamb, you read in Revelation, are going to be in the temple. There is no mention of the third one. You see? Anyway, this is what he's talking about here. And he said, don't do any of those things that God didn't command you. Because the command was, do not have other Elohim beside me, other deities. Because I'm your only deity, I'm your only husband. You see, speaking to Israel. Israel didn't have two husbands, so he's the only one. And he was the direct God of Israel. But that does not mean that Israel didn't know that there is the Most High God too. You see, Israel always had that information. And it's not until later on, during the days of Jesus Christ, of the Second Temple, toward the end there, that much of that knowledge began to gradually disappear from the minds of people. And even then, some Jews still had that information, some rabbis still had that understanding of the divine God, of the El Elyon, of the Most High, and he, the one that he's sending from him, the Messiah, the Deliverer, the Redeemer, who is also a deity, the divine being, the God of Israel. And really, it's only after that after that period, after the first and second century, that information was totally removed from the consciousness of the people of Israel, of the people of Judah, that is, by the rabbis, you see, because they were fighting this idolatry that entered into the so-called church and was threatening, you know, the Jewish community. And so, in essence, they went from one extreme to the other in the process of forgot what the scriptures tell them, what they have known, and what was common knowledge among the people of Israel, that there are two divine beings, and one is sent by the other. And so in verse 4 we continue, and it be told you, that is, if you hear about something like that, so if somebody told you about it, and you hear it, then you shall inquire diligently. In other words, no rush to action. You see, God wants you to be very careful about anything that enters into your brain, your ears. You see, and that's the way it should be treated for anything, you know, gossip. And a lot of people, you know, have their character assassinated by other people, not only who spread around lies, but by the people who are willing to accept it and listen to it and hear it and develop attitudes or take action, or whatever it may be. You see? So this is the law of God that we have to develop and make it a part of our being and the way we think, the way we act, the way we behave. When we hear something, especially if it is wrong about someone, about some people, never rush to action. Never believe it. Never take it for granted that it is true. You see? The first thing you have to do is verify. Is it true? Do your homework. A lot of people are getting hurt needlessly because they're not doing it properly. And they're being hurt by others, and they themselves that do it. And God says that's the way you handle a matter that comes to your attention, especially if it is a matter of consequence, of grave consequence, that you have to do something about it. And so, if it is being told to you, that means somebody told you, and then you hear about it, you know, whether somebody told you or not, you just heard somebody, some people talk about it, that's the first thing you do. You should inquire diligently. Not just inquire, but inquire diligently. You want to know, you want to get to the bottom of the matter. You want to really know. Not just because people told you, and doesn't make any difference who told you, and doesn't make any difference what credibility they have. It's neither here nor there to God. You must find out, because everybody is capable of mistakes, of bias and prejudice and errors and things like that, you see? God, you know, as Christ said, judge righteous judgment. And you cannot do it unless you go through this process. And we covered it a long time ago in a segment about the proper kind of correction. What measures do you take to get to that point? What are the laws of correction that God has revealed to us? And so it says, you inquire diligently, and behold, if it be true, and the thing certain, that such abomination is wrought in Israel, and that's in essence the guiding principle of the courts of the land, that's when there is justice there, that is, you have to know beyond the shadow of a doubt. You see, especially when it comes to very serious crimes, before you can render a verdict, you know, and if the jury, when there is a jury, cannot come to this agreement, you see, because there are some reasonable doubts, well, they're not unanimous, and therefore a decision cannot be rendered. And so, God made it very important that everything has to be turned upside down. Don't hide anything. Don't overlook anything. Make sure you really make a righteous judgment. And that's the only way you're going to be able to do it. You see? And so, that's a part of the, again, linked to the justice system that we just read about. In terms of the judges and the officers, how are they going to render justice and judgment? How are they going to take care of people in their time of need? You see, when it comes to these matters, unless they're fully knowledgeable of what really happened, not what people said happened. And when they do not do it, that's when you have a lot of corruption in the justice system and bribes, you see, and lies and deceptions, and that hurts people, and people in turn, you know, they get hurt, so they go and do it to others. You know, they do to others as was done unto them. And then everybody pays the penalty for it, unfortunately. And so God says, don't be this kind of people. And so he said, you make sure that you know really what happened, and make sure that the thing is certain, that such an abomination is wrought in Israel, that is committed in Israel, and then shall you bring forth that man or that woman. After you've gone through all this lengthy process of verifying, because the consequences are going to be very dire, very severe, and you cannot reverse them. You see? So make sure that what you do is right. And if we train ourselves to behave that way, to act like that, you see, that anything that comes into our attention, big or small, always make sure in every way possible that you can, beyond the reasonable of a doubt, that it is really true before you take action. And yet, by nature, we don't, you know. Parents look at their kids, they fight with one another, well, he did it, she did it, he did it, you know, they did it, and all that. And the parent gets upset, just smacks someone, or all of them, whatever, and the innocent get hurt. What happens? They grow up like that, they learn, well, that's the way things are done, and they do it to others. And so they perpetuate it from generation to generation. You see? And how can people like that, to begin with, have righteous judges and officers who themselves, as they went through the process from childhood, have been abused and punished, you know, when they were not guilty? You see, that's going to be a part of their nature. They're going to be doing it to others. So you see the vicious cycle that is there. And God says to begin with, do it right and teach others to do it right. And so he says, when you really find out that this is what happened, you shall bring that forth that man or that woman who have done this evil thing unto your gates, even the man or the woman, and you shall stone them with stones that they may die. And who are the ones who are going to execute the penalty first? Verse 6. At the mouth of two witnesses or three witnesses shall he that is to die be put to death. At the mouth of the witness he shall not be put to death. Of one witness he shall not be put to death. And the hand of the witnesses shall be first upon him to put him to death. You see? And afterward, the hand of all the people. You see? Now what that means is that the witnesses, if they've been lying, it's going to be on their conscience. And since God knows who had done it, who hasn't done it, and who is right and who is not, and whether they were lying or not, or that, or they don't, you see, he basically told them, I'm coming after you. If you're going to deceive, if you're going to just, you know, want to get rid of someone, like, you know, the witch hunt that people always have, and they still do, to this very day, you know, they don't do it like they used to do in the past, literally, you know, burn someone, put them to the stake, or whatever, and now they have, you know, the spiritual witch hunt, in other words, putting down somebody, speaking evil of some people, destroying them that way, character assassination, you see, just trying to look for somebody who's guilty, who may seem to be guilty, whom they think it's possible that he may be guilty, and so forth. That's totally contrary to the law, and people who behave that way, they're breaking the covenant, and they're going to bring a lot of punishment upon themselves. Not only by the mere fact that it becomes a vicious cycle in their own society, and begins to corrupt and destroy everything and everyone, but also on top of that, Big Brother is coming, since he watches and knows all things, and, you know, in the vernacular, he's going to suck it to us. For our own good, not because he hates us. You see? And so it's very important for all of us to begin to think that way and to teach our children that way. And that's what God told them, you know, I'm God, I'm the only one in your life, and therefore you should love me with all of your being and heart, and now you turn around and teach your children. And a society that functions like that, based on the Torah of Moses, has peace and joy and happiness and tranquility and serenity. You see, and all good things in life. But a society that departs from the law of Moses has just the opposite, and that's basically what every society on the face of the earth is based on. Rebellion against the law of Moses, the law of God, the law of harmony and unity, the law of Christ. It's all the same. You see? And they're different. And they're different gods, different religions when it comes to these matters. And that's in that way that Jesus Christ is saying to the Father, you and I are one. You see, we don't have two different religions. There's no religion of the good, or the New Testament, religion of the Old Testament. You see? There is no law or way of life of the Old Testament and the New Testament. We are one. And to begin with, Christ is the one that gave the religion that is so-called the religion of the Old Testament. He is the God and the husband of Israel, was, is, and will be and none else. Period. That's what he made it very plain from the beginning until the end, until the false prophets come, the liars that should be put to death, and will they will be when the time comes. You see, nobody's going to escape the wrath of God. And that's going to be the end of it. And God is not going to tolerate that anymore when it comes to the coming kingdom when Jesus Christ reigns upon this earth. That's what he said, he's going to go after every one of them that have done those kind of things. And he's going to purge the rebels from the midst of his people. They're not going to be allowed to continue to do their evil works and lies and deceptions and fornications. And that's what Revelation is all about. The coming punishment on all those people who are into witchcraft, into false religion, into deception, into demonism and Satanism. You see? Into deception of people. Speaking the name of God when God hasn't spoken through them. And he's going to put a total end to it. That's the reason why all about 90% of humanity are going to be decimated from under heaven. And the 10% that will be left behind, they're going to be obedient to God. They're going to say, yes, sir, and no more play games. There would be no idolatry at that time. You see, spiritual or physical, whatever it may be. No false religions, no deception, no confusion. And so, this is what they do here with a person that goes astray. Put them to death. Simple. You don't need lawyers. You don't need lengthy trials. You don't need prisons. You see? That's ungodly. The prison system is an ungodly institution. It's a demonic institution. And it's a place where you produce demons who didn't used to be. You know, if they weren't, they will be. Once they go through the system of the prison system. That's where you put all the demons together. You see? All the evildoers together, well, they make each other even more evil than they were before that. Just trying to survive in that place. This is what does to your spirit. And it's a very demonic invention. And God is going to crush this whole system and those who are responsible for it. Because God made it very plain how he wants his people to be treated. If they're not guilty, you let them go and live their life in a city where the priests are there to teach them the law. You know, they didn't do things right. And they have dignity and respect and honor there. But if they are guilty, make them pay for it immediately. And then set them free. You see? Well, when men depart from the law of Moses, and Israel certainly has departed from the law of Moses, because all of Israel, just like all the Gentiles, all the nations all around, all the heathen, you know, as they were called in the past, all of them have a prison system which is contrary to the will of God. And so we are all paying the penalty. You do not solve a problem by sending somebody to jail. It just produces another criminal that is even seven times worse than he used to be before that. Then he comes after you when he's out of prison. What did he gain by that? You see? That's foolishness on the part of man who think, you know, that he's smarter than God. And that's what he's saying here. Just put an end to it. That's it. Stoning to death. That's the end of the story. Then you bury them. And then you go on with your life. And so the hand of the witness shall be first, because they have lied, you see, they're going to be paying the penalty by the direct hand of God, and later on, you know, other people may find out about it, and anyway, they will end up being stoned. So it doesn't pay, you know, to lie and deceive, you see. And as it is, the judges have the responsibility that we read about before, the justice system, the judges and the officers, to make sure that it is really a crime that was committed here. And so all these things are linked here, and including the idol worship in between. And so the hand of the witness is first, and then all the people. So shall you put away the evil from the midst of you. And God decides what is evil, not man. Verse 8, if there arise a matter too hard for you in judgment, between blood and blood, between plea and plea, in other words, whatever the seriousness of the matter is, the gravity of the matter, sometimes, you know, maybe things that has to do with life, and sometimes it's just minor things, whatever it may be. If you cannot solve the matter between blood and blood, plea and plea, and between stroke and stroke, even matters of controversy within your gates, what is it that you do? You don't go to war. And you shall arise and get you up unto the place which the Lord your God shall choose. You see? and proverbial, you know, the struggle between the Hatfield and the McCoys. If they had that system, if the law of Moses was still in force, you see, if people followed the law of Moses, that would have never happened. You know, they had a dispute, go before the judge, the priest, the people of God, and the matter would have been resolved. That would have been the end of it. But because people don't do it, you see, because the government has invented a system where people cannot do it and have the matter resolved, instead of that, you go through this artificial system where the lawyers gouge everybody in sight, and that's their only purpose for existence. You see, it's not to render justice and judgment. This isn't what they're interested in. They just want to get, you know, the best deal for their customer, and you know, the more you pay, the more you get, you know, the better deal you get. You see, that doesn't work like that with God. You don't need to spend one single penny. And when he went to the judge, to the priest, he didn't give him a penny. There was no court costs. That is the cost of court. All that was not there. That's the reason why he gave him the tithe, to be also your judge and your lawyer and your officer, you see, and your healer and your educator and so forth. Well, that's what happens when we depart from the law of Moses. We're paying the penalty to the healed. And God is going, that's what God is, in essence, allowing us to go through until we have our fill of it and goes, you know, comes to the point where it just comes out of our nose, so to speak, and then we turn to God and cry to Him with the willingness to repent, to change, to alter our behavior and conduct, to come back to the law of Moses, as Moses plainly told Israel. You see, 3,500 years ago, he told Israel, you'll be going your own way, you'll be doing your own thing, you're going to pay the penalty all this time throughout your history until you're ready to come around and you come back to the law of Moses, the law that I gave you today, and you're going to obey all that I have given you at that time. And the history of Israel was recorded in advance 3,500 years ago. And that's what God said. And through Malachi, unless you come back to the law of Moses, my servant, unless you remember it and walk in it, I'm coming after you, and I'm going to destroy the entirety of the whole earth. Well, as it is, it's going to destroy in essence, or allow to be destroyed, or cause to be destroyed, and be involved personally in it, the destruction of 90% of the earth. But he's going to leave one-tenth behind. And he's going to deal with them, and they're not going to be playing games anymore. And so, he says, when you have a matter like that, you go before the Lord. You shall arise and get you up unto the place which the Lord your God shall choose, and you shall come unto the priests, the Levites. That's a justice system. Why? Because God gave them the law, the teachings. They know what is right, what is wrong. You see? And they know what to do with it. And they're being paid for it. That's what the tithe is all about. So you go to them. And you don't need to go just like they do today. You go through a lower court, an appellate court, superior court, you know, state court, supreme court of the state, until you go to the Supreme Court. And who's making money all this time? The lawyers. So who created this system? Not God. You see? But people, men, greedy men, covetous men, deliberately they created such a system, supposedly, you know, to do good and justice in the land. And there was a sinister, you know, plot behind it. That's how we make money. That's a lawyer system. You see? That's not God's system, and that's a demonic system. To gouge and to rob and to defraud and to take as much as you can out of people. You see? And people don't realize what manner of spirit they are when they behave in that way or they create such a system, and they don't realize that God knows their names. You see? They know their thoughts. He knows everything that they've done, and they're going to be called to justice and to judgment before the judge of the whole earth. And no lawyer is going to get them free at that point or deliver them from him. Now, some people, you know, are going to make fun of it. Most lawyers to begin with couldn't care less about God. They don't believe in God. But it's neither here nor there. This is reality, and it's going to happen. And if you happen to be a lawyer, you better prepare to meet your God, you know, your judge, the judge of the whole earth. because you cannot fool him. And so he says, he shall come before the priest and before the judges, and unto the judge there shall be in those days, and you shall inquire. So the judge oftentimes was a priest, sometimes God called a special person, but oftentimes the overwhelming majority of the prophets of Israel were also from the priesthood, because they are the ones who knew the law. And see, God is not going to call an ignoramus to go and preach in his name when he doesn't know what he's talking about. And so you go before that person, he said, and you shall inquire, and they shall inquire what, you see? Are you going to inquire what's his opinion? What's the opinion of the court? It is the opinion of the court. That's what you hear all the time. Who cares about the opinion of the court when it comes to God? God is interested in his opinion, not the opinion of the court. You see? And you can see how many people are defiant of God. That's why the carnal mind, you know, Paul says, is an enemy of God. They hate the way of God, the system of God. And the ones that God is coming after the most are the leaders, those in government, and the justice system, the judges and the lawyers, you know, the top, the ones who are really oppressing the people and eating them alive. You see? And none is going to escape that. They are the ones that make it possible for crime to be beneficial in the land. They make it that way by that very system. Because a lot of people know, you know, I can get away with murder. All I have to do is just get me a good lawyer. You see, but if you knew that you are coming before a judge, before a priest, before a Levite, who obeys the law of Moses, you know that justice, genuine justice, is going to be there, so you're not going to be playing games. And you cannot hide anything, because if the man doesn't know it, that you stand before the judge, God knows it, and they had an access to God to find out really what's really happening here. And so it says, you come before them, and you shall inquire, and they shall declare unto you the sentence of judgment. Based on what? On the opinion of the court? No. Based on the teachings of God, based on the law of Moses, and based on the fact that at times, if the matter is not even known by them, the high priest could go directly to God. He had the manner in which to do it. God made it possible. You see, with the Urim and Tumim, the things that, you know, the breastplate that he had and the stones that were there, and that he had a way of communicating directly with God. You know, that was his private cell phone to God. And he certainly could not fool God. If you could fool a judge, you could not fool God. So ultimately, and even if at that time that didn't happen, God knows what you have done, and he's coming after you one way or the other. So nobody escapes, be it in this life or in, you know, even after the grave. And so verse 10, it says here, and according that is, you shall do according to all the tenor of the sentence which they shall declare unto you from that place which the Lord shall choose. So you're going to the temple, you're going to Shiloh, you're going to the place where God resides in his spirit, and therefore you better come clean. And you shall observe to do according to all that they shall teach you from the law of Moses, that is, as you read in verse 11, according to the law, according to the Torah, which they shall teach you, not their own opinion, and according to the judgment which they shall tell you. Again, which is based on the law of Moses, that's the constitution. You shall do, you see, whatever they tell you. You shall not turn aside from the sentence which they shall declare unto you to the right hand, nor to the left. So you're not going to try to get away with it, one way or the other. Pervert justice, or judgment, or do your own thing. So you better not do it. And the man that does presumptuously, you see, bezadon in Hebrew, Zadon basically means wickedly, maliciously, with an evil intent, you see, with a rebellious spirit. And so the person who does that, in not listening or hearkening to the priest that sends the minister there before the Lord your God, it's as if God himself is sitting on the throne of judgment. If that's the way you're going to behave after that, you see, he says, even that man shall die. So if he does it before the judge, refuses to accept the sentence, or the officers come after him, and that's the end of that person. It's simple as that. See, the administration of justice in Israel was very simple, very basic, wasn't expensive, wasn't complicated. wasn't being dragged on and on and on and on. Didn't lead to jail. You see? And so when people live under this kind of system, they don't play games. And everything becomes simple and easy and clear. And you know what to do. And so he says, and you shall exterminate. And just like you go after the cockroaches, you shall exterminate the evil from Israel. And God would not tolerate people who function in that manner. Deceitful people, evil people, violent people, wicked people. And had the system today was functioning in this manner, had the fathers of the Constitution really followed all the way the law of Moses and the law of God, the law of Christ, had they understood it, had they worked it out into the Constitution, instead of inventing their own, a mixture of truth and error, human concepts, you see, and teachings of the law of Moses, because all of them were well, you know, well versed in the law of Moses, they would study it, but they were not willing to go all the way, because that's basically what Israel was all about. Well, anyway, we're going to stop at this point. Again, Mordecai Joseph, greetings to all of God's people until the next lesson.